Wireless on Flirt FM 101.3.
Hello and welcome to Wireless, the radio series all about radio, broadcast monthly on Flirt FM 101.3 in Galway and on flirtfm.ie. Wireless covers all aspects of radio, AM, FM, DAB and other formats, community, regional and national broadcasters, pirate radio, podcasting and radio's history and future prospects. I'm John Walsh and I'll be with you for the next hour. Many thanks to Brian Green for stepping in for me at the last minute in March and for keeping the show on the air. We're a week late this month because of the Easter break, but we've a packed show nonetheless. Coming up on the April edition of Wireless. 30 years after the end of the golden era of Irish pirate radio, radio historian Eddie Bowen tells us about a new exhibition on the topic coming up in Dublin. We also air the first of a series of interviews commemorating the pirate era, this month with David Baker, who was involved in many of the early stations. Irish language station Radio Reraw returns to FM to mark its 10th birthday, and we hear from an event about making a career in radio held recently in Limerick.
Wireless on Flirt FM 101.3. Follow us on Twitter at Wireless Flirt.
We'll have our monthly Radio Retro feature in a moment, but first to some of the big radio stories making the headlines over the past month. The BBC has said that the shutdown of FM in the UK would be premature, raising more questions about the future of DAB and DAB+. The corporation's director of radio, Rob Shannon, told the Radio Days Europe conference in Vienna that it wanted to keep FM for the foreseeable future before implementing a switch over to DAB. Shannon stressed that the BBC remained completely committed to digital, but that for now audiences would be best served by what he called a mixed economy. Analogue radio was due to be switched off in the UK in 2015, and we'll be returning to this story in a later edition of the programme. As a year has passed since the announcement that small-scale DAB services were to be established in the UK to broadcast RTE following the closure of its long-wave service on 252 kHz, we decided to investigate how the project was developing. A spokeswoman for RTE told us that consultation was ongoing and that meetings had yet to be held with regulatory authorities in Ireland and the UK. This didn't sound like progress, so we also spoke to the Save RTE Longwave 252 campaign, who told us that the UK regulator Ofcom had delayed the project and that the whole process had been put back by about a year. Last year it was announced that RTE would switch off Longwave in 2019 to be replaced by small-scale DAB services in parts of the UK. National commercial station Today FM launched three new streaming services in March, Today FM 80s, Today FM 90s and alternative stream Today XM. None are available on DAB but can be accessed through the Today FM app or by streaming from its website. Autism Radio was on air on a temporary licence from April 2nd to 8th in Dublin and Cork. The station is a not-for-profit organisation committed to making a difference in the autism community and aims to improve the lives of the individuals diagnosed with autism spectrum disorders. Another new station with a positive mental health message is Shining Bright Radio. Still in the planning stage, its website says the station aims to bring a new vision to radio, where music uplifts, inspires and empowers the listener. You can listen at shiningbrightradio.com. And finally, well done to the Radio SOC here at NUI Galway, who held a 24-hour charity radio marathon on March 25th in aid of Médecins Sans Frontières, involving live music and DJs. You can still donate to idonate.ie/RadioSOC24HR.
Wireless on Flirt FM 101.3. Follow us on Twitter at Wireless Flirt.
And And now to Radio Retro, our monthly feature that dives into the archives to unearth a gem from radio history. 30 years ago in 1988, the government passed legislation to outlaw the large numbers of pirate stations that had proliferated during the previous decade. A loophole in the original legislation dating from 1926 had allowed pirates to flourish and become a real threat to the only licensed broadcaster, RTE. In a moment, we'll feature the first of a series of interviews with people who were involved in the Irish pirate era of the 1970s and 1980s. But first, we'll hear a flavour of one of the successful stations in Dublin in the last few years before legalisation. KLAS, later known as Class, was an easy listening and classical music station broadcasting from 1986 to 1988. A full decade before RTE Lyric FM, KLAS tapped into a potentially large market of people in Dublin who did not want to listen to pop music all day and made a real impact on the capital's lively radio scene in its short existence. Here's a selection of professionally made jingles and commercials.
Dublin's only easy listening station. On 98 Stereo FM. Tranquility on Class 98.
You're listening to KLAS 98, bringing you musical tranquility on 98.5 FM. It's time for a KLAS commercial break.
When you invest with Irish Nationwide Building Society, you enjoy high interest rates with complete security. Now, Irish Nationwide, one of the top four building societies, goes one better. Irish Nationwide's Gold Saver Plan gives you 1% extra interest, paid monthly if required, with only 90 days notice for withdrawals. Now you don't have to tie up your money for long periods to get extra interest. Pick up a Gold Saver leaflet from Irish Nationwide Building Society today. Gold Saver, it's the one that counts.
National advertisers Irish Nationwide Building Society and Stag Cider, underlining the status of Dublin's easy listening station KLAS as a heavy hitter. Based in the very housing estate where I grew up in the suburbs of Dublin, I was lucky enough to get work at KLAS at a very tender age, I must add, even though the music policy was more aimed at my parents' and grandparents' generation. In those days, KLAS was run by the late Hugh Hardy, who ran the successful Radio Carousel network in counties Meath and Louth. And I'd like to acknowledge Hugh for giving me my first real break in radio. Thanks to David Baker for that recording. And that's this month's Radio Retro. We'll have more memories next month.
Wireless on Flirt FM 101.3. Follow us on Twitter at Wireless Flirt.
This month we begin a series of interviews with people who were involved in the Irish pirate era to mark the 30th anniversary of the close downs. Our first interview is with David Baker, who joined KLAS after several years with various radio stations since the early 1980s. David has now clocked up over 35 years' experience of radio in both Ireland and the UK, and I wanted to hear his memories of the Dublin scene and get his impression of radio today. I asked him how he first became involved in radio.
Well, I was at school at the time, and it was I always had a love for the radio, and of course the pirates were sort of I was around sort of with Big D, ARD, Radio City, Capel Street in Dublin, which was my very first job, and Hugh Brown, who's sadly no longer with us, I have to thank for giving me my break into radio, and I started Radio City 257 Capel Street. reading sports results on a Saturday afternoon.
And when would that have been? The late 70s, was it, David?
Yeah, it was like 1979/80. It was a real nerve-wracking experience, But it was a great thing to do and a great start for me. And from there, it kind of led on to a number of different stations from that time as a presenter. Big D, ARD, and then on to Radio Leinster in 1982. There's a bit of a story from that one because Danny Hughes, of course, was very well known from radio circles in that time. And he was running Radio Leinster up behind Lamb Doyle's in Sandyford. And he was having open auditions. So there I was on my bike as a young kid, going up the mountains on my bike for an audition. And I arrived at Radio Leinster and he goes, "How old are you?" I said, "Oh, I'm 20. You'd be way too young now for an easy listening format at Radio Leinster. But sure, we'll give you an audition anyway." And so there I was playing Frank Sinatra, Ella Fitzgerald and all that. And I come out and he goes, "Well, you've blown me away slightly for a young lad." And he said, "Yeah, we'll have you. You can do Sunday evenings. You'll do," he goes. So Radio Leinster it was, and one of the best views ever for a radio station in those days.
Because you were so far up the mountain.
It was overlooking, basically, looking over the whole of Dublin City.
I think it's important to remember as well that Radio Leinster was quite an innovative station, I think, was ahead of its time in a way. It was kind of competing with RTE Radio 1 in some ways, wasn't it?
That's right. And the thing for me is, and throughout my career, it's always been about having some kind of identity and music. And I'm very into my laid-back, easy style of music. And Radio Leinster kind of set the... set stations on their way to do that kind of format, and it proved very popular. But unfortunately for Radio Leinster, it probably came, I wouldn't say it came too late. What actually happened is there was quite a lot of raids around that time, and I think Radio Leinster just went away in 1982. There was some raids on Nova and Sunshine and things like that, but Radio Leinster suffered. And never came back.
And then you moved on to other stations after that. For instance, I think you were one of the people who set up Radio Ringsend, which was more of a community-style station.
Yeah, I mean, that was great to be involved. I mean, I loved my time doing community radio. And I want to highlight community radio. It's one of the things I want to mention today. It's an important role that community radio is playing in the future of Irish radio. But Radio Ringsend, Radio Sandymount, Radio Donnybrook, event radio... that was set up for community weeks in these areas. And it's the closest I think I'll ever become to becoming a pop star, because, you know, you'd be walking along the streets, "There's the DJ. There's the DJ. Can I have your autograph?" You know, we had all that in those days. Mm. It was great fun. And, they were set up by, those community radio stations were set up by Dave Reddy, another well-known name from Irish radio in those days. So I was involved with those stations. And then I went on to get involved with Heartbeat. It was set up as a love songs radio station in the back of Dolphin's Barn in Dublin. And again, a complete identity to anything else that has been played on the radio. Love songs all day long, 24 hours. Would it work? Very, very popular station. It was on 95.5 FM. And of course, after Heartbeats came one that I know you know a little bit about, John. I know you've done some blogs, and that was KLAS.
Indeed, and I suppose for listeners, we should say that this was... a very successful easy listening station, which was coming from the same housing estate where I was growing up on the north side of Dublin in Sutton. And you said you were young beginning with Radio Leinster, but I was really young beginning with KLAS. And I must have been the youngest presenter ever on an easy listening radio station, which was being listened to by my grandmother's generation.
Well, it was incredible, really, because I think when Hugh Hardy set up KLAS, most of the music, from what I remember, was mostly classical and easy listening. Mm-hmm. There was no sort of Sinatra's or Nat King Cole. It was all mostly classical in the very early days of it. So it was something very unique for a pirate station to be playing just nonstop classical. But again, another man that I've got to really thank for really launching me into my career. Certainly, we'll come to the UK in a few minutes. But Hugh Hardy was an amazing gent. You know, he really pushed me hard to do various things. He taught me a lot. And with KLAS, which then went on to become Class Radio, and it was all pretty much the same sort of thing. But he really did push the boat out with that station for sure. And I know you've great memories of it.
Absolutely, I do. And certainly for me, it was my big break as well, because before then I had been involved in much smaller and much more localised stations. But this was one that was available right throughout Dublin. And I'd say, given the relatively free FM band of the day, probably got a lot further than Dublin as well. I know there used to be talk about letters coming from the UK on clear days and so on. So can you remind us maybe, David, of your memories of the kind of setup that was behind KLAS and Class? What kind of facilities were we talking about? How professional was it as an operation?
Well, you know, I think it was. I mean, the studios themselves, I mean, you know, the soundproofing was carpet on a wall. I always remember. I think Hugh had taken some carpet from somewhere, some remnants, and he soundproofed the walls with the remnants. You know, mixers, cassette decks, you know, all that kind of thing. I wouldn't say it was basic, but it all worked pretty well. It all worked pretty well. I just wanted just one very brief story on KLAS, which I know I wanted to mention. It was about baked beans. And you're probably thinking, what on earth has baked beans got to do with radio? But this is a great story from KLAS. Hugh Hardy used to be based down in, he was up in Newry. He was up in Newry a lot, so he was up and down from Radio Carousel. And I remember him ringing me on a Friday afternoon, which was effectively payday. Yes, there was such a thing as payday. We did get paid. And he rang me and said, David, I can't get up to pay you. And I said, well, Hugh, I said, I'm a bit strapped for cash. I said, you know, you can. He says, well, I won't be back till Monday. He said, but my son, Kevin, he's in the house. He said, and if you go and tell him the situation, he'll feed you with some baked beans, and that will keep you going until I get back. So, there we are.
And did you take him up on his offer?
I did, and I also slept on the room. There was a room near the studio that was used for sales, and Angela McQuaid, no longer with us as well, another lady who passed away number of weeks ago. I don't know whether you know that, John.
I didn't know. She was the sales rep from Dundalk.
She was sales rep, yeah. And there was a room just sort of as you came into the back area there.
That's right.
So I actually slept there across the weekend and lived on baked beans. Oh, and then Hugh came and paid me so I could get home. That was a true story, but it was, you know, you can laugh about it now, I suppose.
And what did you do then when legalisation came along, David, in 1989? Did you stay in Ireland for that period?
What actually happened in 1989 is obviously I was with Class Radio. It was my very last station, 31st of December, 1988. I'd made the decision that, you know, I was going to give the UK a bit of a go. I was going to try very hard to get something in the UK. It was going to take quite an amount of time, I think, for the legislation to come in Ireland and different things to happen. A lot of people said, oh, David, you should stay. You'll find something. There's going to be so many stations, everything else. But I didn't really want to be out of it. And I decided to come across to the UK. And I got very, very lucky in, amazingly, June 1989, when I got a call from the program controller of Essex Radio in Southend-on-Sea, Keith Rogers. And he said to me, look, we're opening an easy listening station, Breeze AM. And we'd really like you to come and meet her with us. And I was absolutely blown away with that. I kind of like, incredible. I just went down and I ended up being offered a full-time job with Breeze AM, a brand new radio station launching. And I did the late night show for 9.5 years. And that gave me my big break into the radio. And then in 1998, I then started to, I moved across to a radio station called Chelmer FM, which was opening up in the Chelmsford area, and did the breakfast show there, and then did some program controller work with that station. I forgot to mention during our passage of the pirates that I did have 2 weeks, by the way, on Radio Caroline.
Oh, well, that's an important story.
Yeah, I forgot to mention that as we were going through the 80s. It was only for a few weeks. I didn't fare too well on the boat, to be honest, so I had to come off, but sorry to backtrack slightly there.
Why did you have to come off? Was it because of seasickness?
Yeah, I just, obviously in those days there was no contact, there was no real contact with anybody apart from the Sally Ferries passing every day, and I just didn't settle. I didn't settle there at all, but it was a great experience to do it. It's a great experience to do it.
So coming back to your time in the UK then, you spent several years in the UK, but you came back to Ireland eventually, and you came back to legalised radio in Ireland eventually.
Yeah, I mean, in 2006, returned back to Ireland, and I had about a year doing stuff for Dublin's Q102, which I really enjoyed. I was doing shows across the schedule there and lots of cover work and everything else. Did a few bits there. I was on Beat 102, 103 down in
Waterford,
covering drive time for a few weeks. So it was great to do that. Made me feel young again. And then I was with the launch of Spirit Radio 2011.
Mm-hmm.
And I spent a year doing evenings on Spirit Radio. Obviously, Radio Snowflake is another thing that a lot of people will recognize. I've been involved with that now for the last number of years from an Irish perspective.
And this is another Christmas radio station.
Christmas radio station. Now, Radio Snowflake, I've always described as the original Christmas radio station, because back in the days of the community radio stations back in the 80s, Radio Snowflake was... you know, it was there in 1982, 83, Radio Snowflake was there. So I brought it back about 4 years ago. And, you know, whilst Christmas FM are doing a fantastic job and they're raising an amazing profile for so many charities, I thought, well, you know, I'm going to do it as well. And we've been working with the Irish Kidney Association. We did Samaritans Dublin and some homeless charities as well. So Radio Snowflake will be back in December 2018.
And what did you think when you came back to Ireland after all the years? I mean, obviously it had been probably the best part of 20 years since you've been on the air, and you had been in an illegal pirate radio sector before, and now everything was legalised. I mean, what was your impression? What did you think of Irish radio at that stage?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny actually, when I came back in 2006, Irish radio reminded me of what it was like a little bit back in those days. I actually did feel a little bit like that back in those days. And I got a good feel out of Dublin's Q102. Enjoyed working on that station. It was very suited to my style and everything else. I kind of felt I was just going back in time a little bit. It was, you know, because there was a lot of faces that I knew from the days of, you know, your radio stations back in the 80s. Scott Williams, of course, was at Dublin's Q102 at the time.
And what do you think that Irish radio is good now? Does it have a good variety and a good diversity?
Yeah, coming on to now, you know, what I think is diversity is a big thing for me, and I think that that's where Irish radio might be lacking. I think that, I mean, David Dennehy, another name that you may be familiar with.
Yes.
He's setting up a number of different radio stations now under the Dream banner. So he's got Dream Country, Dream Love, Dream Easy. And that's the sort of thing. I don't think there's enough variety on air because obviously, you know, you've got your FM 104s and you've got your, you know, FM 104 and 98 FM and everything and Spin. But there needs to be a little bit more variety. I just don't think there's enough of it. And hopefully we're going to see some changes. I know there's some legislation coming in that hopefully will open the doors to a number of different operators. I mean, country music is very popular, and I think there's a need for a country music station. So hopefully somebody will do it.
Isn't it incredible in a country like Ireland when there's so much interest in country music that there wouldn't be such a station?
Yes, it is. It is, but I don't think it's too far away. I think we're going to see the doors open where there are going to be different formats and different styles. One station that does a very good job is Sunshine 106.8, as far as easy listening is concerned. And they, you know, I always listen to them when I'm back in Dublin. But I think that diversity is the one thing that I think we need to see change with. Is a lot of stations are very samey. Now, having said that, obviously the weather's been atrocious across the last number of weeks, and this is where local radio does come into its own. So your Tip FMs, stations like yourselves, KFM, which is, you know, I was KFM for 3 years as well, doing a lot of voice tracking for them. These are stations that are vital to people's everyday lives. And, you know, I think it's really important that these stations don't go the way of the UK and amalgamate and suddenly become one station. So over here you have the heart radio stations who have swallowed up a lot of local radio stations, and localness is gone.
Mm-hmm. What would you think of the BBC local stations? Do you think, are they good? Are they good operations? Are they a good balance between what you need in terms of local and broader interest, perhaps?
Yeah, I think they are, but you mentioned their broader interests. I think they kind of, the BBC, the local stations, they're always seen as being a little bit old and tired, and they need a little bit of, they need a young kick. I think they're a little bit old and staid, to be honest with you.
You said before we spoke on air that you thought that KFM, which is in Kildare, was a good example of what a local station could be like.
I think KFM, you know, as far as Irish radio goes, I mean, I had a great time at Q102 for the year I was there. But KFM as a station is, when you think of the stations that are actually beating into that part of the country, pretty much you've got all the Dublin stations who are getting into that part of the country. But KFM are delivering an amazing audience. The growth in their reach and listened yesterday and everything else is growing at an incredible rate. And I put that down to consistency in their programming. You know, some people have been on air there for 10 years, and they've just been there, and they're part of people's everyday lives. And, you know, Kildare was badly hit with the weather a few weeks ago, and KFM really, really came to the fore as far as coverage was concerned. And I think they're doing a remarkable job.
And you did say, David, before we spoke again, that you had some issues coming back to Ireland about your accent, which is an interesting question, because you do sound a little bit different now to when we were working together in the Pirates in Dublin in the 1980s. You sound like somebody who spent some time in the UK, but you wouldn't expect that to be issue in Irish radio.
I don't think there should be. One thing I don't think is, I'm not going to mention any names or anything like that, but I have, you know, always, you know, I've always sort of kept an eye on vacancies, you know, if opportunities come up that I think, well, maybe I quite fancy that. But I sent a demo to a radio station, and it was a combination of lots of things I'd done in Ireland, I'd done here and everything else, and I got a reply back saying, thanks for your email, but I'd like to know why your demo is half English accent, half Irish accent. And I was really offended by that, actually. I thought that was a really offensive thing to say. Mm-hmm. I just felt a bit offended by that. Because at the end of the day, I am Irish. Ireland's my home. It always will be. But to say that, it's bordering on, a racist comment.
And would you have had the reverse in the UK, that your accent was partly Irish?
No, people just think that I've got... I've always been described, I remember the first program controller over here, Keith Rogers, said, you've got a nice Irish lilt. He didn't say Irish lilt. He said mid-Atlantic sound to your voice. That's it. But, yeah, a little bit offended by that. But, that's the way it goes, you know.
And have you any other radio plans at the moment then, David? Are you involved in anything in the UK at the moment?
I am involved with a couple of things. Obviously, Radio Snowflake will come back at Christmas for Ireland. But as far as the UK is concerned, I've actually launched a online radio station called Chelmer Radio. And it follows on a little bit from my involvement in the radio scene back in 1998 when I joined Chelmer FM. And it's based in Chelmsford. We're using the slogan local radio for local people. It's going to be covering the middle of Essex. And the idea I have behind that is to actually put it into a shopping center with studios in the shopping center, keep it online. And then next year, the Ofcom here are advertising DAB small scale licenses for different areas. And at that point, I will look to apply probably for a DAB small-scale license if it becomes available, which I expect it probably will. But it's a good area. You've got a lot of good sport there and very good businesses, and Chelmsford is a real growing city when it comes to business. But as far as everything else is concerned, it's a question, John, you know yourself. It's a never say never to anything. If an opportunity comes up that I think it's too good to turn down, well, then you follow what you believe. I did look, and it was documented on radio today. I did look at, and we did set up an idea for a country music station over there. But I think there's probably bigger fish in country music circles that can make country music work over there. Bigger fish than myself, so I dropped the idea.
David Baker, now of Chelmer Radio in the UK, who has worked in various stations in Ireland and the UK over the past 35 years. And we wish him the very best of luck with his latest radio endeavour.
Wireless on Flirt FM 101.3. Follow us on Twitter at Wireless Flirt.
Staying with the pirate theme, an exhibition marking the 30th anniversary of the Close Downs will be launched in Dublin next month and feature paraphernalia and rare archival material from a variety of stations, big and small. The pirates were the Cinderella of Irish radio. While RTE and the larger licensed stations hold official archives, unlicensed broadcasters rely upon radio enthusiasts to save their memories, and indeed much information about them has been lost to history. The exhibition has been coordinated by radio historian Eddie Bowen.
Well, the radio exhibition in May is to celebrate or commemorate the 30th anniversary of the introduction of the 1988 Wireless Telegraphy Act, which basically brought an end to the pirate era, the major pirate era of the 80s, 70s and 80s. The exhibition will start in the South Dublin County Library in Talla, right beside the Lewis stop, on May 8th, which is a Tuesday. It'll be on every day. And throughout the month of May at the weekends, we hope to have lectures and talks on various aspects of pirate radio from some of those who were involved with pirate radio at the time. The exhibition is basically tells the story of pirate radio from its very inception in 1916 all the way through to 1988 with the closures. And we have a lot of memorabilia that has been donated to us, including pens, mugs, car stickers, buttons, rate cards, advertising rate cards from various stations, including Sunshine, Q102, Bineside, ERI. It's basically just to give a flavour of the social impact pirate radio had on Ireland throughout the 80s.
Tell us a little bit about some of these highlights then in the exhibition in your mind, some of the material that you've mentioned. What would stand out in your mind as being particularly important, as a particularly good illustration of how influential these stations were?
Well, if you look at the rate cards, the advertising rate cards from all the stations, I mean, you have to remember these were illegal and they were competing with RTE, who were certainly able to increase their advertising sales as their ratings went up. But pirate radio had a different set of plans. The advertising rate cards, first of all, you can see it's like social history, the price of what an ad was. And you can actually, we'll show you how you can compare to what RTE were charging at the time. But they were very professional. The advertising rate cards are professional. You could get a professionally produced advertisement. They had production studios. They had various plans of whether you could take 30 seconds over 1 month, 1 week, 6 months. And they show that while they were illegal, they were very solidly founded as pirate radio.
How do they compare to RTE in terms of rates? Obviously, you weren't comparing like with like. RTE is national. Some of these were very local stations, but at the same time, they had very high listenership in their areas, many of them.
Well, Radio Nova in 1982, Lansdowne Market Research done a survey, which was one of the early surveys to include pirate radio. RTE Radio 2 had 24% listenership. Sunshine Radio, a pirate radio, had 11% in Dublin, while Radio Nova had 41% listenership. And in fact, in late 1982, towards the Christmas period of 82, Radio Nova were charging more per advertising segment than RTE were.
And RTE Radio 2?
Yeah. So, like, you know, so pirate radio, you know, there was money to be made, the listenership was there, and they obviously displayed a need for commercial legal radio, which eventually came after 88. But these stations brought pressure on RTE from an advertising point of view because their ratings were down. They were losing them to pirate radio. Pirate radio were able to up their advertising rates because they could prove they had the listenership. And it became a cat and mouse game between RTE and the pirates to try RTE trying to force the government to close the pirates, which eventually came about in 1988.
So there's a lot of memorabilia involved in this. Is there? Do you make much use of press cuttings explaining the ups and downs from a news point of view at the time?
The press cuttings, not so much. It's more about the memorabilia, the physical memorabilia. Today, with internet, it's easy enough to look up a press cutting. We do have some that probably wouldn't have seen from foreign newspapers, from the British newspapers about pirate radio at the time. We do have a section of newspaper clippings from around December 31st, the 31st, 1988, which announces the closure of the pirates, how, you know, the likes of ERI and Midwest and some of the stations closed in Dublin and Wexford and all over the country.
Which was big news, of course, at the time.
Front page news. This was front page news. Pirate radio was an integral part of the Irish broadcasting scene. It was an integral part of social history in Ireland. Across the nation, some pirates down the country had massive listenership. And it's continued today. Some of the pirates have gone on to have legal status, still have huge listenership down the country, when it's in Donegal or in Mayo or in Galway. So the genesis for them came from pirate radio in the early 80s and mid 80s. When they closed, it was front page news. It was the headline news on RT News Television.
And obviously, in a pre-internet age, things were very different, but many of the stations, of the larger stations, produced their own magazines.
They did. We have a lot of the collection of some of the magazines, like so the Sunshine Review, which was produced in 1983, when actually Sunshine was off the air, when they were closed in May 1988, which is described as the day the music died, when the government closed many of the stations in mass raids on Nova and Sunshine and down around the country. Some closed as a precaution. But Sunshine brought out a Sunshine Review, two or three issues of that, just to keep their listeners up to date of what was going on. There was pieces written by some of the DJs. We have Radio Dublin's magazine, which was produced in the 70s, the 253 magazine. We have Anorax Ireland, their magazine. We have the Irish Free Radio News.
And these were, of course, groups that were for enthusiasts of the radio at the time.
Yeah, they were enthusiasts. They were partly enthusiasts, partly advertising. FRC Ireland had Sounds Alternative out, which is many people's research bible. They go back to that. It was the first time, perhaps in the 70s, it came out. Dennis Murray and that were bringing it out. Or Kieran Murray, should I say. But they were, again, lack of internet age, and because that kind of area wouldn't be covered by regular newspapers or regular media, this was a way for enthusiasts to find out what was going on within radio. It's also a place where you could buy a transmitter.
Indeed, very important information. And are these available at all in any other public places? Is it possible to get these kind of publications in any libraries in Ireland, or are you really relying on personal collections? Because they are very important from a researcher's point of view.
I know the Sounds Alternative magazines are available in the National Library. They do have copies of that. The rest of them, no. It is in private collections. I was lucky enough over the years to be an enthusiast and to be collecting them. And I've been lucky that some of the lads who have donated collections to me had some issues of it that I didn't have. So I was able to put them all together in a section just to give it a flavour of, you know, it wasn't just radio, that they were trying to be multimedia in a period when there was no internet.
You said as well that there's a panel about television, about pirate television in the exhibition. It's something that maybe would be even less known than the pirate radio period because the operators were perhaps more limited.
Yeah, there was several pirate stations, especially in the late 70s, early 80s. We had one of the more political versions of it was Telefisken og Gaeltachta, which went on the air in the late 70s, which was a part of the campaign to get what would become TG4 on the air. They went on the air in Rossmuck for a couple of nights. We had Channel 3 or Channel D in Dublin in the 1980s. Was fairly popular. Had a lot of repeats. They had their own programmes. They made their own programmes like Weekend Today. Showed films, and we have various clips of that. There was Radio Nova Television, which really forced the hand of the government to clamp down on any attempt to put television on the air. Having seen the success of Radio Nova itself, and the government weren't going to allow television to come under the control of Chris Carey and Radio Nova.
This was the final straw.
It wasn't even the final straw. It was just another straw. It probably led to the 88 raids, one of the various aspects that led to the 88 raids. There was Cork Pirate Television with LTV1 and 2. LTV1 was in Macroom, LTV2 was in Mill Street. BBC, which was located in Galway. BBC spelled B-B-S-E-E. So BBC was in Sligo. Radio Dublin tried a test card. He actually managed to get a test card on the air for a couple of weekends, although it didn't go to live programming. And Capital Radio also had Capital TV. They managed to get a clock on the air as a way of trying to get on the air. And it was, in fact, I think it was Capital's TV transmitter that Chris Carey used to put Nova TV on the air.
Okay. What about the political aspect? Do you cover that at all in the exhibition? Obviously, there was a lot of politicking going on in the 70s and 80s, especially from 82, 83 onwards.
We don't cover a lot in the exhibition. Again, there is so much scope. We were trying to cover almost 100 years of pirate radio. We go back to political pirate radio insofar as the 1930s and the 1940s, some of the IRA pirate stations, especially even in the 50s. We tell the story of Sean McNeela, who was an IRA man who died on hunger strike, the only man to die on hunger strike anywhere in the world, having been convicted of pirate radio broadcasting, which he did do in 1939. He died in 1940. We tell some of the stories about a little bit of the tribunals and that where it did affect, and go back to some of the pirate radio times. But again, trying to be non-political, we're trying to just tell the story. I'm sure we could, if we had more time, more space and more finances, we probably could tell a bigger story, but we're trying to use what we have at the moment.
And you said as well, there's obviously, you have a section that will be focusing on the so-called super pirates of the 1980s, and also that there are ways that people can listen to excerpts from those stations as well as part of the exhibition.
Yeah, so in especially because of the better audio from the time, in the 80s, the likes of Radio Nova and Sunshine and ERI, WLS, ABC, some of the bigger pirate radio stations, Radio West and Mullingar. So what you do is you're able to go to the exhibition and understand where we have the super pirates. We'll have a QR code, and you just scan your QR code and you're able to listen to the jingle packages from each of these pirate radio stations.
Great. So can you remind us again then where and when the exhibition is on, and if there are any plans then to bring it elsewhere at the moment?
Well, it'll initially start in May 8th, out in the South Dublin County Library. We then plan to take it to various Dublin City libraries between the end of the year and into 2019, which will be the 30th anniversary of the introduction of legal radio. It happened in July 1989. So we'll be telling the story that this was the genesis. This is where these stations came. These are the roots for the commercial stations we all listen to today. Still 85-90% of Irish people still listen to radio every day. So the genesis of those stations you listen to comes from pirate radio, and many of the personalities involved in radio today came from pirate radio. Big names like Mark Cagney in the TV AM, Ireland AM in the Morning, started on pirate radio. We have a section on that telling some of the people you may have heard of, Mark Cagney, Marty Whelan, who of course was Marty Hall on the radio. Tom Dorley, who was on The Restaurant, he started on pirate radio.
Really?
The man who does the voiceover for Mythbusters, Robin Banks, he started in Kilkenny, it's Chris Richardson. So their stories are all told. So we intend to hopefully take it around the country, because pirate radio is in every corner of the country. And we're hoping that perhaps libraries or educational institutions who'd like to see the exhibition come down for a week, 2 weeks, or even a month, just to get in touch with us, and we can take the library. It's easy, it's mobile, we're able to take it down, and we do a specific exhibition on the pirate radio in that locality. So if you're from Galway, we do the stations in Galway. If you're in Sligo, do stations in Sligo. Because we're in Tala, when we're starting off, we're doing a section on the station that were located in Tala, the likes of Wonderland Radio.
Radio historian Eddie Bowen speaking about his exhibition on pirate radio due to be launched in May.
Wireless on Flirt FM 101.3. Follow us on Twitter at Wireless Flirt.
Radio Reraw is Ireland's only chart music station broadcasting entirely in Irish. Launched originally in 2008, it has broadcast mostly online and on DAB in Dublin during that time, but it recently returned to FM to mark its 10th anniversary and also Seachtain na Gaeilge, Irish Language Week. I spoke to Radio Reraw manager Niamh Chronin and asked her to tell us about the station's history.
Yeah, well, Radio Reraw started broadcasting on the 3rd of March in 2008. After a launch, it was launched in Trinity College. And at the time when it started, it was called Radio X. And that name stuck for a couple of months. And then there was a national competition to pick a new name for the station. And Radio Reraw came out on top. And that's the name we've had since. I guess the idea for the station, there was a lot of talk going on in 2007. And I think it was suggested that Ordesh, Conor na Gaeilge, that a station like this be established. And then after a couple of meetings, and I know I put a photo on Facebook a few weeks ago of one of the first meetings, and there was a lot of well-known faces in kind of the Irish language world, a lot of young-looking faces in 2008 that all got together and made it happen. So the 3rd of March 2008, Radio Reraw broadcast for the first time on our website at or.ie, and that's where we still are. Since then, lots has happened and lots has changed. I'd say a few hundred presenters have probably helped out with the station over the year, and now we do radio workshops in schools. We travel around the country doing different things. We put out every year a CD with Irish language translations of songs from well-known artists like Ed Sheeran has done a song for us, Codaline, Picture This, Gavin James, lots of really great music like that. So stations come a long way, but next step is to make it a full-time station on FM in 32 counties. That's been kind of the end goal since the start in 2008, so we're working hard towards that at the moment.
And what's the difference between yourselves and other Irish language broadcasters? Because we do have quite a few Irish language stations now. Obviously, Radio na Gaeltachta, you probably wouldn't be in competition with them. But there is Radio na Liffey in Dublin, Radio Fáilte in Belfast, and now in Galway, here in Galway, Radio na Drav as well. So how are you different to all of those?
Yeah, well, we don't see it as competition in any way. We actually work quite closely with a lot of the stations. At the moment, Radio Reraw, we record a programme called Reraw or Ornagy that Radio na Gaeltachta play out on Tuesday to Friday night. So that's kind of focused on young people. And we had, so when we were doing our 10 days on FM in celebration of 10 years, we had some people from Radio na Drav and Radio na Liffey in with us, and we're talking to Radio Fáilte at the moment about maybe swapping programmes and things. So there's a lot of kind of cooperation going on, and it's not competition in any way. But Radio Reraw is very different from the three other stations, from Radio na Drav, Radio Fáilte and Radio na Liffey, in the sense that they're community radio stations, and Radio Reraw wouldn't be that. Radio Reraw, we focus on chart music, so music you'd hear in the top 40 in Ireland, in the charts in Ireland, the charts in the UK and America, that kind of music. So it has different aims, and our station would be focused kind of solely on young people. Our kind of our target audience would be 12 to 30-ish, in and around that kind of age group, where community radio stations would be more open for all ages.
But so essentially the only difference then really between yourselves and say FM 104 or Spin 103.8 is that the links between the tracks that you play are in Irish, and everything else is the same as any pop music station anywhere. Would that be a fair assessment?
Yeah, similar enough. There would be a couple of different things. I mean, if we were on FM, we probably have kind of a chat show or something like that we don't have at the moment. But more or less, our playlists would be very similar to, say, the likes of Spin or 98FM. The reason that we think it's important to have the station is that so many young people listen to that type of music. And not everyone who's young, but a lot of people who are young want to listen to kind of pop music, and they want to be able to turn on the radio and know that they're going to get modern music. So where we kind of come in is that we could provide that service, but have our presenters speaking in Irish. So when they go to turn on to the radio to really good music that they really want to hear, but they're also listening to someone speaking in Irish, and in that way they're picking up and engaging in the language a lot more.
And you've been on FM a few times in the past. How has the recent FM experience been, and how does that differ from your standard experience of just being online?
Yeah, so, well, how it differed, I suppose, we felt like engagement was a lot. There was a lot more people, you know, texting in. There was a lot more people engaging with us online and social media. We had a lot of schools involved as well. So we definitely reach a much wider audience. You know, mainly we're on DAB in certain areas, but our main kind of two platforms are online on our website or .ie and on the app. So it's been a really great 10 days. It's been busy and everyone's quite tired now, but everyone did a really great job. And we had guest presenters in. We had Micheál O'Curry from TG Cahir. We had Dahi Moksivna, who's in Fair City, and a couple of other people as well. Sean O'Beale we had in Gráinne Bleasdale. So we had, like, it was great to have kind of well-known Irish language voices on the air. And as well as that, it was something really special and different and exciting for our current presenters, who a lot of them would never have broadcast on FM, let alone broadcast on FM in four counties. So, no, it was really great.
Have you any knowledge, a clear knowledge about who exactly is listening, how the listenership has been during your period on FM, or is that data still to be gathered?
Still to be heard. We haven't heard anything about that data, so I have to look into that. Usually, we don't have a lot of listenership figures for our station. Aside from being on FM, we have figures for who listens on our website, but we think a lot more people would probably listen on our app. And we actually, just the way the app is, we can't get listenership figures for that. So I don't know if it's a good or a bad thing. I think people get hung up on listenership figures an awful lot, and they are important, but whether it's a good or a bad thing, we can't get a lot of the listenership figures.
So listeners to Wireless and Flirt FM may not necessarily be familiar with Irish language broadcasting, but I think it's fair to point out that the Irish language is very marginal on most of the country's radio stations. I was involved in research myself about that recently. So why is it important to have a full Irish language station like this? And would it not just be better if Irish was more closely integrated into mainstream radio stations that many young people listen to anyway?
Well, I'd say do both. A lot of stations have Irish language programming. I do a show on Spin 103.8 that's bilingual, but probably more Irish than English, which is great. And I don't think, you know, there's short links in the show, and I'm still playing out the same music. So I think it works as well in English as it does in Irish for that kind of show. But I'd say stick with them if mainstream stations that are already there and established have shows in Irish. That's really great. But I also think that it would be really great to have a full-time station, that if people decide that they want to listen to the music in the charts, but they want to listen to it in Irish, then it should be available for them.
And how close are you to achieving that aim? Because that's obviously a lot different to being on the air for 10 days.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's probably an issue of cost more than anything else. You know, we have an awful lot of support, but this has been the end goal since 2008. But just in the past year or so, we're really, really focusing in on it, and we're talking to politicians and different meetings coming up to discuss it. So I'm hopeful. I mean, what we say a lot is that look at the difference TG Cahir has made and how far we've come from TG Cahir. And what I think really works well in promoting the language is when younger people especially can do normal everyday activities, but do them in Irish. So you've like football teams like Na Gael Óga in Dublin that do football, which is a normal everyday activity, but you can do it in Irish. Or you stand up comedy, but you can go to stand up comedy in Irish. So if you want to listen to your normal music, but you also want to listen to someone speaking in Irish or presenting in Irish, then you should be able to do that. So
is it about building a community, you think?
How do you mean?
Well, is it a community of Irish speakers that you're trying to build, or is it a radio station that happens to be in Irish? Is there a community ethos there? Are you trying to strengthen networks of Irish speakers in what you do?
I guess we're trying to bring more people into it and have more people involved in it. I mean, I think I don't know for definite, but I'm sure TG Cahir, you know, they'd have people who would be fluent speakers and would have spoken all their life. They would watch TG Cahir, but they'd also have a lot of people who wouldn't have that much experience with the language, watching TG Cahir, because TG Cahir have really great programs on the television. So what we want to do is have a radio station with really great chart music for people who already have Irish and want to listen in, but also for younger people who mightn't have been exposed to the language as much, who will pick it up, and we can bring them along that way and help them along.
So when will we hear Radio Reraw on FM again? Do we know?
I don't know. Hopefully soon. Hopefully soon. Well, this is Bliain the Gaeilge already is hooked egg, so it's the perfect year for it to happen. So fingers crossed.
Niamh ní chronaíonn Bainisteoir Radio Reraw gur míle maith agat as a bheithling wireless ar Flirt of Eminuv.
Gair magad.
The Limerick Institute of Technology's music festival last month included a panel entitled Getting Paid to Work in Radio. This featured Nessa McGann of youth station Spin Southwest, Paul Prenderville of Limerick's Live 95 FM, Owen O'Kelly of RTE Lyric FM, and Ray Wingnut of Spin Southwest and RTE. Here's a flavour of the discussion, beginning with Nessa McGann recalling her first attempt to get paid work at RTE Cork.
Eventually somebody answered the phone and said, come in for a week. And I went into RTE Cork for a week and I was unpaid. And I stayed for 2 weeks unpaid, and by the end of the first month they started to pay me some money. So I worked in RTE Cork for a while, came up to Wired in 2001 and was here until 2007 when I went to Spin. So that's how I got into radio. So I'm the manager in Spin at the moment, so I'm in charge of all the programmes, the DJs, the hiring, the what music we play, what competitions we do, what kind of campaigns we do. I now work across digital and social as well. That's a big change for us. So I help to manage all our social channels, our digital channels, what we're doing, and then marketing campaigns. I'd be closely involved in those as well. I try and stay away from the sales side because I don't really like money, but I understand that it's part of what keeps our business, and we are a commercial business, going.
How's it going? My name is Ray, and it's lovely to meet you all. And I remember the time when I first decided I was going to try to work in radio was when I heard a hardcore punk band from Limerick called Give a Man a Kick on the radio one evening, and immediately what came on after it was Planxty. And I remember I was learning to drive my parents' car at the time, and I thought, this is just me, you know, this is, I've never been happier, and I've never been more just elated to be immersed in this. So, much like yourselves, I went to study media down in Tralee, and I studied interactive multimedia. And I realized as I was doing it that the most important things that we do, besides in the classroom, is what you do yourself. So, I started a pirate station in my attic with some old equipment that I found in the Coolay Gaeltacht in West Cork. And we had to buy parts from Romania to fix it up and stuff like that. So I realised that what I loved doing was putting the hours in on the mic and stuff like that. And of course in the college radio as well. And which, like Nessa, I was involved in college radio. When I was in college, I went to work in Triple Z in Brisbane, which is alternative community radio in there. And it was very informative as well. You might, if you're into radio, you're probably familiar with Triple J. Well, Triple Z is quite similar. And then after that, I straight out of college, I started working in Radio Cork Abashkin in West Clare, which again is great, and that's what college radio is all about, I think, is learning just the functions, the entire functions of a station, and in familiarising myself with that, it kind of was very informative. But, like always at Square One, it was always alternative and Irish music is what I was really, really devoted to. And I was lucky enough to meet Nessa eventually, who gave me a gig on Spin Alt, and now I'm able to do what I would normally be doing on unpaid in college or community radio. I'm now able to do it in a professional environment. And it's a very creative environment for me. There's a lot of creative freedom for it. So I'm in a very, very privileged position. And I suppose that's, like you were saying, that's ultimately, it's a big goal. And it's always something to keep your eyes on the prize in terms of create the radio that you want to make and that you intend your voice to be at, I suppose. So, what else do I do? Oh yeah, I work with RTE as well. So I work in children's television in RTE. I'm a puppeteer. So by extension of that, I produce shows for the digital station RTE Junior Radio. So I make a very strange brand of radio. I make radio for 4 to 7 year olds, which involves me going into the studio in Lyric FM, which is a very adult environment, I suppose, very grown-up environment, I suppose I could say, and then I go in there and go, blah, 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 how's it going? Oh, I'm making a morning show, so I make hours and hours and hours of content for a 4 to 7 year olds, which is great fun and really creative, and especially when you bring kids into their studio and stuff like that. So I just think keeping creative and your own voice is the most important thing that you have, and that what you have to contribute to the radio industry. So that's me.
Ray Wingnut of Spin Southwest, ending that discussion about working in radio held recently in Limerick. And thanks to Ray Burke of Wired FM for that recording. And that's this month's Wireless on Flirt FM 101.3. We'll be back in May with more news from the radio world. In the meantime, you can follow us on Twitter at Wireless Flirt or read our blog wirelessflirt.wordpress.com. This is John Walsh wishing you good listening.